We're Zooming with Connie Schultz tonight. Her name is likely familiar to you as the Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist for the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Her books include Life Happens and Other Unavoidable Truths, a collection of her previously published columns, and her second book titled And His Lovely Wife, a memoir from the woman beside the man, which is a journal of her experiences on the campaign trail as Ohio's Democratic Senator Sherrod Brown's wife. She teaches journalism at her alma mater, Kent State University, and has just written her first novel, which we're going to talk about tonight. It is titled The Daughters of Erietown. Connie Schultz, I'm delighted to welcome you back to Around Cincinnati.
Thank you so much. It feels great to be back.
So one of the interesting things that gives your novel such depth is the scope of time that it covers. It begins in the 1950s, and there are several daughters, actually, but at the center of it is Ellie. So she starts her early life in a place called Clayton Valley, and I'd love for you to tell us what she's like, who her family is, what her dreams are, and, you know, maybe move her through time as much as you want to for us.
Well, thanks for asking about Ellie, because, of course, I do consider her to be at the heart of the novel. And there are a number of women who play prominent roles in it, but it all hinges in the beginning on Ellie, who is a girl, a young girl, and then a young woman in the 50s and 60s. And when she starts out, she dares to have a dream, mostly because of an aunt who was willing to fuel a dream for her because she was abandoned by her parents and was raised by her grandparents. And she felt very much a woman of that time, that you were supposed to get married, you were supposed to have a family. And she's in love with Brick McGinty, who is going to be the first, it looks, to be getting a full scholarship to college. So she has her own dreams and thinks maybe she can go to nursing school. But then everything changes for both of them when Ellie becomes pregnant as a teenager. And especially in the 50s, it's been interesting to hear from some young women now who've been reading it, and they get so angry at her lack of options. But they also have to acknowledge that that's what it was like, particularly to be in a small town in the Midwest. This is not happening to a young woman in New York City. And so the trajectory of both of their lives changes. And Brick ends up getting a union job in a utility plant. They moved to the town of Erietown, which is still a small town on the shores of Lake Erie, but it's a much bigger place than Clayton Valley. And that's where our story takes off then, is what does it mean to be Ellie in this time and in this place? And what does it mean to be Ellie who ends up having a daughter? That pregnancy results in a daughter, and her hopes and dreams for her, even as she sometimes can resent the opportunities her daughter may have that were not available to her.
So as a journalist, you often focused on the underdog and the underprivileged. What was important to you to focus on in the characters you created for the daughters of Erietown? And what did you want us to come away knowing about them?
Well, I would say if there's any particular narrative arc of this novel, it's people who live and are raised, grow up in the working class, have the same, many times, hopes and dreams of people who are born far more lucky. The difference is when the big problems come and there's no money to fix them. And in case of Ellie McGinty, of course, it's the pregnancy when she was a teenager, still in high school. I come from the working class. By working class, certainly we should make clear this is not just white people we're talking about. It was not true for me, having grown up in Ashtabula, Ohio, where half of my classmates were Black all through elementary school, which a lot of people don't know about places like Ashtabula. But we do have our own hopes and dreams, and our parents invest so much of their energy and time often in our futures. I also have an awful lot of interest over the years in telling the stories of women's lives, because throughout history and throughout journalism, it's so often the men whose voices are heard. And so this is a logical extension in that way of the work I've been doing for 35 years of journalism, is trying to find ways to tell stories about people who are often ignored.
I do want to talk about your writing life. You've obviously had a long and successful career as a journalist, but I'm guessing the fiction presented, as I used to say to my kids, new learning opportunities. Was that true for you?
Oh my goodness, yes. You know, as I tell my students all the time, look, if you're never scared, you stop growing. Well, I'm terrified right now because I've just written my first novel and it's a good feeling. I do feel the growing pains, that's for sure. The thing about making the pivot from journalism to fiction writing is when you reach that impasse in the story or a moment of tension and you're not quite sure where to go with it, you can't pick up the phone and interview anyone. You can't call them. The people you need to talk to are the ones who've been taking up residency in your head. And the good news is, if you really commit to it and you decide you really will be this novelist, the characters start speaking to you in different ways. And I know how weird that sounds to anyone who doesn't write, perhaps. But I think fans of fiction will certainly understand it. And I've loved novels all my life. I always was missing the people I come from showing up in novels, however. They were somebody who was wacky or a little, you know, who dumb, or they were props for something else. But this entire book never makes fun of working class people. It doesn't romanticize it by any stretch. And in that way, it's an extension of the work I've been doing as a journalist for so many years. I've always loved telling the stories of people who are often not heard. And I would say this novel is full of those kind of people.
So I am wondering, do you miss LA? And will we go back to Erietown? What's next for you? Do you know at this point?
My husband, Sherrod, loves to tell the story. It was about, I think I was well into my revisions of my novel. And he came into the house one day and I looked really sad. And he said, what's the matter? And I named a particular character and said that he died today. And he said, well, honey, you've been working on this book for 7 years. You knew he was going to die. And I said, yes, but I've grown quite fond of him. I am working on a second novel. It is not an extension of this particular story, but I'm not ruling that out down the road. I want to see how readers respond because these characters are very fresh to me yet. Some writers really let their characters go. I know some of them. I've interviewed some of them that once they're done and they want to move on. I feel a real attachment to some of my characters, partly because Ellie and her daughter, Sam, they have more of life to live yet. It's clear that they feel that way about their lives. At least I hope it's clear.
Wonderful. The Daughters of Erietown is certainly an interesting journey through much of the last half of the 20th century. And I thank you so much. It's delightful to talk with you tonight.
I am so thankful to you, and especially that you clearly read the book. Thank you. I'm finding that to be a habit with the women who interview me. So thank you.
Oh, yes. Yes. It was a great experience. I've been talking with Connie Schultz about her latest book and her first work of fiction titled The Daughters of Erietown. And you can join Connie Schultz virtually at Joseph Beth on June 17th. You'll find more information at wvxu.org/aroundcincinnati. I'm Barbara Gray.
Hello, Ohio. The back roads. I know Ohio like the back of my hand. Alone, Ohio, where the river bends, and it's strange to see your story in my life. I've seen a thousand dreams through the threshers, all torn to pieces, and the land turned a prophet there, and a good son lost his life.